Hello, and welcome to the Legion Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting the Legion of Superheroes from DC Comics. This is Legion Spotlight number 31, and I'm continuing my look at the Legion of Superheroes with the comics published in 1966. Next up is Adventure Comics 346 and One of Us is a Traitor. Was released on May 26th, 1966. This was written by Jim Shooter with art by Sheldon Moldoff. It's a 12-page story. First page is an interior cover. And no ad on the final page, so really 11 pages of story. Now, you'd think they'd cover a lot of ground, but honestly, they don't. The first two pages is just Cosmic Boy getting to the clubhouse for the meeting. He's delayed because he's got to go save somebody. So kind of, frankly, typical for Shooter of this era, spend a page or two of just a little minutia business that they're doing before the story really gets started. The rest of the installment is tryouts. But unlike most, where we do a rapid-fire thing of a couple of people trying out and getting rejected because they really don't have powers, or they're kind of, you know, corrupt, or their powers are useless or something, we get four people, all four of which get granted membership. First up, Princess Projectra with illusion powers, unanimously granted membership. She's a long-time Legionnaire. Second up is Nemesis Kid, who uses his alchemical skills to give himself the power to defeat any opponent. Which, I don't know what that means. At first, I was thinking he was, like, bioengineering himself, which would have been kind of interesting. But then when he fights an atomic robot, he transmutes the air into lead to form a shield, he transforms himself into neutronium to absorb the energy of the robot, and he warns him, hey, my powers may not work against more than one adversary at a time, although we never see that really come into play. And he is unanimously granted membership. Next up is Pharaoh Lad, who can turn himself into iron, and still move. I point that out because Stone Boy could turn himself into stone, but not move. This makes Pharaoh Lad indestructible, gives him super strength. He's granted membership. And then finally, we've got Karate Kid, who is a skilled fighter, judo, karate, his own style, etc. And he notices that they're expressing a little doubt that he could hold his own against the various superpowered individuals, so he fights Superboy. Superboy's a little worried about accidentally killing this guy because he's a normal guy. And while Superboy wins the fight in the end, Karate Kid makes a really good showing for himself, and at one point is looking like he's going to win. That convinces Superboy that Karate Kid deserves membership, and presumably he's granted, but at this point it's the end of part one. And really, other than two pages of Cosmic Boy saving somebody on the way to the meeting, nothing else happens in this installment other than tryouts. Now, there's no mention of a traitor in the story, but it's front and center on the cover, in the interior cover of the story. And while I enjoyed this, because I like a number of these characters, it felt really decompressed for the era, and it was kind of interesting. Not bad, but I look at how many of these other 11-page stories, they cover so much ground, and here it was literally all set up, much of it for the rest of Legion continuity, because, again, Princess Projector, Karate Kid, a Pharaoh Lad to a lesser degree, are pivotal members of the Legion. Nemesis Kid, not so much, as we'll find out as the story plays out. But once again, that's One of Us is a Traitor from Adventure Comics 346. Next up is Adventure Comics 346 and Part 2, The Invasion from the Edge of Space. Same creative team, another 11 pages, minus a third of the page at the end, and I'll get to that afterwards. It's not an ad, it's actually the statement of ownership, which is kind of interesting. Anyways, a new galaxy has been discovered. It's dominated by a single world, and the United Planets fears it might be aggressive. Well, it is. It's the Khund. K-H-U-N-D. I'm spelling these out because I don't know how to pronounce this stuff. But they're a major kind of aggressive race. They're kind of sort of the Klingons of the Legion universe, if you will. And it's funny because they're getting a data dump. They're watching literally a film of Khund space to get information about it, and a Khund spy had inserted a message from their warlord into the film the Legion is watching, saying, "You must surrender within an hour." Now, first off, it's actually hilarious. They're watching a physical film, like a reel-to-reel I don't know if it's 8mm or what, you know, kind of a thing, that this was, like, spliced into. Now, I chalk this sort of a thing up to storyteller interpretation, meaning it didn't really happen this way, but that's kind of how the storyteller was able to understand it and explain it to the then-modern audience and stuff. So I think we've always got to take some of this with a little bit of a grain of salt of they were watching a video, not necessarily a film per se, but, you know, video on the computer or whatever their equivalent would be. And that, again, kind of a thing is always going to be a topical reference that the storyteller would use to make it understandable to us, the audience. And the Kuns are demanding Earth surrender to them. They've got kryptonite weaponry because they know about Superboy. And again, the parallels between them and the Klingons is kind of hilarious, particularly since at this point, Star Trek hasn't aired. The Klingons don't exist, because this is May 1966, and I think it was September of 1966 that Star Trek went on the air, and it took Klingons a little bit to get into the show. But again, the parallels there are kind of interesting. The Kuns, much like the Klingons of the early Star Trek era, don't look that different from humans. Later, they become a little more alien. With the Kuns, they become basically a lot beefier and such, whereas in the Klingons, they get the forehead ridges, stuff like that. So again, storyteller interpretation. How characters look evolves, again, based on what they think the audience would accept or understand. Now, they've got this alien invasion coming, and Legion has a secret weapon. 3 Electro Towers. Not sure exactly what the Electro Towers are, but they've got 3 of them. But they fear a spy might sabotage the towers, so teams are dispatched to protect them. Turns out that's a good fear, because the Kuns have a spy in the Legion. Remember, we know there's a traitor in the Legion. One of, presumably, the 4 new people is the traitor. Now, the team that goes to guard the Alaska Tower is Cosmic Boy, Phantom Girl, and Karate Kid. They get attacked. Cosmic Boy goes to investigate a blast, which is really just to draw him off. Phantom Girl goes after a spacecraft, and she's knocked out by a shockwave when it explodes. Now, she's intangible at the time, which should have protected her from the shockwave, but it didn't. Anyways, Cosmic Boy saves Phantom Girl because she'd been knocked out, she was falling, and they get back to the tower. It's been destroyed, and Karate Kid is saying he was knocked out from behind. So, of course, naturally, Phantom Girl suspects Karate Kid. Now, having grown up with Karate Kid as a member of the Legion, I thought the likelihood of him being the traitor fairly low. Had I been reading this off the rack at the time, we got 4 new members. Any one or all of them could be spies. So, again, I'm coming into this with some baggage. I think any modern reader would be coming into it with some baggage that the then-current reader would not have had. That's the end of part 2, and this is continued next issue. And again, this story is feeling very decompressed for the era. And I'm surprised that we're getting another kind of multi-issue adventure so soon after the last one. And again, different writer. This time it's Jim Shooter and stuff. So I think a lot of my preconceptions on what the standard storytelling was versus some of the actual stories that broke the mold and stuff at the time are certainly getting tested. Because while a lot of these stories are either done in one part or at least done in an issue, we do have continuing storylines that were atypical for the time happening here in the Legion. So, kind of interesting and worth pointing out. And again, this issue is the first appearance of Karate Kid, Princess Projector, Feral Lad, and Nemesis Kid. So, kind of a big issue in that regard. So, once again, that's part 2, Invasion from the Edge of Space, from Adventure Comics 346. Next up is Adventure Comics 346 and the Statement of Ownership. Now, it's kind of weird, because we'd just gotten a statement of ownership a couple issues back in 342, and this is for the same year and the same comic of Adventure Comics. So I'm wondering if they filled that out, published that, and realized, oh wait, we needed to include the print run and the actual circulation information. So, really kind of weird. Now, at this era, they've got an average number of copies for each issue during the preceding 12 months, and the single issue nearest the filing date. And again, the filing date here was October 1st, 1965. Again, this came out later. It takes time, slower point of production, yada yada. And we've got a couple of different numbers. The net print run had 757,000 on average. Most recent issue had 788,000. The paid circulation, which is sales through dealers, carriers, street vendors, counter sales, etc., was 510,000 average, 501,000 for the nearest issue. And I'm pretty sure that is it. The print quality on this isn't particularly great. That may actually be a... Actually, I think it is a 601. And typed text on newsprint on old comics is hard to make out sometimes. I'm going to go with that is 601. No. I was going to say it could be, but I'll explain in a minute why it is the 501,000. The next line is mail subscriptions. On average, they had 10,440. Single issue was 9,521, and then we get the total paid circulation, which on average was 520,440, and for the single issue, 510,521, which is why I think the circulation through dealers was the 501,000, not the 601,000, although again, the way it's there, it could be either. I'm pretty sure it's the 5. Anyways, free distribution, including samples by mail or any other means, 142 both on average and for the most recent issue. Now, in later years, these would be comp copies and things like that. So I don't know if these were ones that were actual samples given out to anybody or kept around the office for internal use or things like that. But it seems low enough that only a handful of people, you know, obviously 142 tops, would have gotten copies for later reference. So again, probably a couple of copies went to the writer, the artist, the editor, around the office so they'd have something to go refer back to. Now, the total distribution, which is the paid plus the free, is on average 520,582. Most recent issue, 510,663. The next line is office used, leftover, unaccounted, spoiled after printing. So kind of the didn't get paid for but was still printed. On average, it was 236,418. On the most recent issue, it was 277,337 copies. So the leftover unused waste, if you will, is twice what a hot-selling comic today would be, possibly three or four, and like 10 times what a low-selling comic would be these days. So again, the numbers we're talking about here, again, 500,000 copies of paid circulation, is just staggering by today's mind. And then again, the final item is the sum total, which is again matching that print run above. So these figures I find very interesting because it tells us, again, that total print run, there was no more than X copies, and then how much was paid, how much was waste. And honestly, I'm surprised how much of it is actually paid circulation. Because about 68.75% of the average and about 64.79% of the most recent issue were paid copies. That's a lot higher than I would have expected, because I recall seeing in later years when we still had the statement of ownership in comics and I was doing the sales figures, it was often 4 out of 5 copies were not paid. They were just there to hope to get the sale on that 5th copy. So again, totally different era than we're living in now. But that was, you know, 1966 that this was released in, 1965 this data was compiled in, and we're, you know, half a century later. So this is why I've been mentioning the statement of ownership and stuff. The fact this one came just a couple issues after the last one with the same filing date makes me think they kind of goofed on that first pass and had to do it again. Because this is required by the postal code. So by law, they have to do this. This is section 4369, title 39 of the U.S. State Code, I think it's 4 parts cut off here, because again, they didn't align it quite right when they shot the master on this for the print copy, I think. Anyways, kind of interesting. Again, they had a paid circulation of over 500,000 units, which in the entire time I was looking at the sales figures for new comics, there were a handful of comics that met or exceeded that. And they were things like the Obama issue that he was on the cover of a Spider-Man issue. I think there was a Star Wars one, a few other promotional things or whatnot. But literally half a dozen, maybe a dozen absolute tops that got up into this level out of everything that was being published over the 15 or some odd years I was publicly doing the sales figures. And I would even extend that back the previous decade I'd been looking at the numbers prior to that. So really interesting stuff to me at the very least. So once again, that's the statement of ownership from Adventure Comics 346. Next up, also from Adventure Comics 346, is Meet the Legionnaires. This is a two-thirds of a page text feature that is basically just listing off the Legionnaires, the Honorary Legionnaires, the Legion Reservists, the Legion of Substitute Heroes, and the format's basically code name, few words about what powers they've got. You know, Cosmopoy has magnetic power, so it's not really in-depth by any stretch of the imagination. It does include the new Legionnaires we just got of Feral Lad, Nemesis Kid, Princess Projector, and Karate Kid. Honorary members does explicitly list both Jimmy Olsen and Pete Ross. The Reservists are Bouncing Boy, which it mentions is Chuck Tane. It's the only person that mentions their non-powered name, because he doesn't have powers. Kid Psycho is also mentioned, and we get the Legion of Subs. And not only do we get Dream Girl and Star Boy being members, it has Color Kid listed, even though we haven't actually seen him with the subs yet. He's a longtime member, so I'm not the least bit surprised he joined. But I think this is our first indication he officially did join, versus having been just pointed in their direction. So again, this is the kind of thing that I think is kind of fun and cool that I really wish they would do more often in modern comics versus just a house ad for a comic that, honestly, half the time, most of the people aren't going to read, and they've seen that ad 1,000 times. It's not going to change anything. Whereas this sort of a little information piece, I don't think takes that much effort to put together and would be a fun little piece of back matter and stuff that indie comics sometimes do. Again, Greg Rucka does a good job with that over in Lazarus when that comes out. So no reason it can't be done elsewhere. Anyways, I thought it was kind of interesting that they just kind of snuck that in there and stuff on a page. Bottom of the page is just a house ad for an upcoming issue of Showcase featuring the Inferior Five. But again, getting the list of then current Legionnaires, kind of fun, kind of cool, kind of handy, actually. So once again, that's Meet the Legionnaires from Adventure Comics 346. Next up is Adventure Comics 347 and The Traitor's Triumph. It was released on June 28th, 1966. We still got Jim Shooter on the writing. We've got Kurt Swan on the art. 12 pages, full page interior cover, third of a page out on the last page. The issue's cover really implies Karate Kid's the traitor. And where we left off, that's what Phantom Girl was thinking, so makes sense. Cosmic Boy, Phantom Girl, and Karate Kid are heading to that second Electro Tower. Meanwhile, the remains of the Alaska Tower seems to get attacked by a missile. The guards are quick to shoot it down. Now, granted, the tower's already been destroyed, so I don't know what they're protecting. No sooner have they tried to shoot down that quote-unquote missile, they realize it's a human-shaped thing. It's too late. They've already blasted at it. They think the guy's a goner, but it turns out to be Superboy, so no harm, no foul. Superboy gets up to speed on what's going on. He says, I'm going to go run an errand and meet up with the others over at that second tower. Now, meanwhile, the third tower gets attacked, or maybe it's the second. I was a little unclear which was which, because they tell what cities they're in, but then they reference it by continent, and like Ceylon, C-E-Y-L-O-N, I was too lazy to look up where the hell that is. So maybe that's in South Africa, maybe it's not, whatever. One of the towers gets attacked. It's got to be the third one, because they're at the second tower. Superboy, Lightning Lad, Cosmic Boy, Shrinking Violet, Chameleon Boy, and Lightlass go to protect it. They defeat the attackers, but then the tower gets destroyed by a blast from that second tower they just left. So they double back to that second tower, but the defenses for it are attacking them. Lightlass gets hit, that slows them down a little. Superboy's getting weakened by what seems to be kryptonite radiation in the blasts, but Lightning Lad's able to take out the tower defenses, but lo and behold, the tower has been destroyed. At this point, they realize Karate Kid's missing, and he's presumed to be the traitor, because of course, that's what Phantom Girl was thinking at the end of last issue. Karate Kid has gone to the Legion Arsenal, because that's where the only weapons that could defeat this potential invasion are kept now that these towers are destroyed. The Legion races there, and it looks like Karate Kid has demolished the arsenal. End of part one. Now, I'm curious at this point, because I know Karate Kid isn't the traitor. Long-standing Legionnaire, held in good regard, not the sort of thing he'd do. But everything is pointing to, if I were reading this off the rack, it's definitely him. So, curious how they switch things up and resolve things in that next part. So once again, that's The Traitor's Triumph from Adventure Comics 347. Next up is Adventure Comics 347, and there's Traitor's Triumph Part 2, The Legion and the Warlords. 11 pages, no interior cover for the second part, as they're not doing these days, although they used to do those. Third page ad on the final page of the story, as is kind of common. The Legion has Karate Kid cornered in the arsenal. And Superboy is like, "We've got you dead to rights, kid." At which point, Nemesis Kid comes out of hiding and surrenders, admitting he destroyed the towers and the Legion weapon. He's like, "How did you know?" And the Legion's like, "We didn't. We were going after Karate Kid." And Nemesis Kid is like, "Well, I only surrendered because Superboy said, kid." This is like the Martha coincidence in Superman versus Batman. A little ridiculous, but it kind of made sense here. But at this point, the Kuns are about to attack Earth, and lo and behold, a hidden fourth Electro Tower pops up out of the ground, destroys the incoming Kun fleet, and everyone's like, "How did that happen?" Well, that errand Superboy ran in the first part of this issue was to go make a fake tower and hide the real one underground, you know, super speed, that sort of thing, the Superboy. And in my opinion, kind of a cheat, but kind of makes sense, I guess. And at this point, the Kund fleet is pretty much decimated. There's not much left. But the Warlord, Garlak, uses what's left of that fleet and decides to attack the Legion clubhouse. The Legion decides to go use their jet platforms to counterattack. And I'm like, jet platforms? What the hell are these things? And these round platform things with railings that they can fly on and use as a base to attack from. It's kind of odd, given they've got flight rings, and it's not like Shooter forgot about the flight rings, because when Light Lass is attacked and her platform gets disintegrated out from under her, she's like, "Well, I've got the flight ring, I can fly." So, again, mind kind of blown. I chalk this up to storyteller interpretation of, did they really need the platforms? We've never seen them before, and I don't think we'll ever see them again, so kind of weird. But then we go through a number of Legionnaires doing some stuff. You know, Light Lass is able to take one out. But the key things here is Princess Projector takes out a craft or two by making him lose control and crash when she, you know, quote-unquote, attacks them with one of her illusions. Pharaoh Lad uses a flight ring and essentially does a solo fastball special through a ship of just curls up into a ball and just rams through it, which I found hilarious. Karate Kid goes after a command craft, but his jet platform is too slow and his flight ring is damaged, which really explains why he was on a jet platform, but he does karate, he does martial arts. What was he gonna do up there? I don't know. Anyways, he jumps from his jet platform to the command craft, almost misses it, but grabs onto a protrusion from it, gets onto the top of the craft, karate chops his way into the craft. Now, we'd seen in the previous issue he could karate chop through steel. His martial arts are that good. He dodges a blast and, off-panel, takes over the command craft. It takes him a while to figure out how to fly it back to the Legion clubhouse, because it's hours later when he gets there. At which point, we get kind of the, what I call the parlor scene from the old detective serials and stuff of, they gather everybody into the thing and explain what the hell happened. And basically here, Karate Kid's explaining to the Legion how and why he was at the arsenal. He had suspected Nemesis Kid, didn't want to accuse him without proof. That catches us up to the start of the story when they were cornered and stuff. At this point, Nemesis Kid still hasn't been dealt with. They've kept him there. He's not causing any problems, but he decides to try to use his power against the entire Legion to see if it'll work, and basically ends up teleporting away. So maybe it's a fight or flight kind of a thing. Now, it is interesting in the Meet the Legionnaires thing that it explicitly mentions that Nemesis Kid automatically gains the power necessary to defeat any one, and one's in italics, opponent. So it's not like he can just do anything. And again, I'm curious if he always gets the same power to defeat an opponent, how all that works. Anyways, he winds up teleporting away. We will definitely see him again. He is a long-standing member of the Legion of Supervillains, so we're not done with him by any stretch. But it was definitely kind of intentionally telegraphed that it was Karate Kid and stuff, and the whole thing hinging on both of them having a codename ending in Kid. Little weak, but let's keep in mind, when Jim Shooter wrote this, he was a teenager. So it's not like I'm going to cut him some slack for that, but I'm going to give him a hell of a lot of credit for selling stories to DC, and reasonably good ones at that. Perfect, no, but good, certainly, as a teenager. And he, of course, would go on to take over Marvel. He would create the Valiant Universe, go on and do Defiant, and tons of other stuff in comics. So again, Shooter's a big name. Anyways, this was a four-part, two-issue story that's basically setting up three new Legionnaires, adding a new villain to the roster and stuff of the Rogues Gallery for the Legion and such, and telling a reasonably good story and introducing the Kund, who become a mainstay of the 30th century. So, kind of cool. And While it took longer than the average Legion story, it did cover a lot of ground when it's all said and done. So, once again, that's The Traitor's Triumph, Part 2, The Legion and the Warlords, from Adventure Comics 347. I only got through two issues and really one story, plus some text features like the Statement of Ownership and the Meet the Legionnaires, but I think this is a good place to stop this episode, and we'll pick up next time. We're about halfway through 1966 and the Adventure Comics for the Legion of Superheroes from that year. So we'll come back and pick it up next time. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.